You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the second pilot is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. Before we get started and I introduce this week's guest, I need to let everyone know that I will be in Birmingham, Alabama, the weekend of May 23rd through 26th, coming up very soon, for the Alabama Phoenix Festival. This is a great convention in only its second year. Last year was probably my first or second favorite convention I did all year, and that's pretty remarkable for a first-year convention. So I will also be doing a book signing either at Books A Million or Little Professor Bookstore on Thursday the 23rd, right before I'm interviewed on NBC TV 13 about the new Auburn book by John Ringer and me. John is, of course, the co-host of the sister show of this one, the Wishbone podcast that we do about Auburn football. And hopefully we'll get John down there, too. So so the weekend of May 23rd through 26th, we'll be doing a big sci-fi, new pulp extravaganza at the Alabama Phoenix Festival. And we'll also have the football book for any Auburn fans that happen to listen to both shows. I can't wait to get down to Birmingham, and I hope to see a bunch of my old friends and make some new ones. It should be a really great time. Now, speaking of conventions, this week we're talking about the granddaddy of pop culture conventions, and I'm omitting that Hollywood studio-driven thing out in San Diego. I mean for the fans by the fans. This week's topic is Dragon Con memories. And I couldn't think of anybody better to join me to take a walk down memory lane than Keith DeCandido. Welcome aboard the White Rocket, Keith.
Thanks for having me, man. It's been
okay, Keith R.A. DeCandido's career has included writing approximately 50 novels, as well as short stories, comics, blog entries, and more. He's written in 20 different licensed universes. That's amazing, ranging from Marvel Comics to Star Trek to Leverage to Serenity to Farscape, and received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the International Association of Media Tie-In Writers in 2009. That is awesome, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
He also has a series of fantasy police procedurals, which started with the novel Dragon Precinct and also includes Unicorn Precinct and Goblin Precinct, with the short story collection Tales from Dragon Precinct, just released by Dark Quest Books. He's also been doing a twice-weekly Star Trek rewatch for Tor.com, having recently finished The Next Generation and started on Deep Space Nine. He's also an editor, a podcaster, a second-degree black belt in karate, and probably some other things he can't remember due to lack of sleep. Keith, I'm really glad to have you on board, and I think this should be a fun hour or so of kind of looking back on some of the things that you and I separately and or together have gotten into and seen and done and often perhaps been startled by at DragonCon.
Yeah.
But first, I think the first thing we probably need to do is define for our listeners who maybe don't know exactly what this DragonCon thing is. How would you describe DragonCon?
DragonCon really is, it's not so much one big convention as about 15 little ones all in the same place. Except little is really not the best way to describe DragonCon
right.
at all, because it's cute. There's a whole bunch of different tracks that people can do. So if there's only one particular thing that interests you, you can focus on that. But there's also a wide variety of types of things you can focus on as well. There's lots of stargazing, goodness knows. They have plenty of media mm-hmm. guests there. But there's also lots of authors, there's lots of artists, there's lots of cosplayers, there's lots of musicians, there's just a wide, pretty much the entire gamut of genre/geeky behavior. And there's something for everyone there, and there's several things. And, you know, if there's stuff you can't stand, it's also easy to avoid.
Yeah.
But, yeah, one of the things I like about it over something like, say, San Diego is that it's subdivided and categorized, so you can stick with the stuff you like and avoid the stuff you don't. Which is much harder to do in, you know, a big mountain of chaos that is San Diego Comic-Con or even New York Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is interesting how it's spread out across... well, let me give the technical. It's 4 days over Labor Day weekend each year in Atlanta. So it usually starts somewhere in August and ends in September, interestingly. It takes up usually what? The Hyatt Regency, the Marriott, the Hilton, the Sheraton. Last year they added the Peachtree. Five huge hotels.
Five hotels. And the events are all just in those five hotels.
And spread around. So if you just like one track, you never have to leave that hotel, really. And then this year they're going to put the dealer's rooms and merchandise type stuff over in the apparel and merchandise mart, which is like a huge convention hall across the street. So, I mean, it just takes over downtown Atlanta.
I love the fact that they actually built little, we call them habit trails, but the little walkways among the three main hotels, the Hilton, the Hyatt, and the Marriott. They basically built those for Dragon Con. That's the only reason they're there, is so people can more easily traverse among the three main, you know, because those three are all like in a row on a hill. So it's easy enough to go back and forth among them. The Sheraton is like a block away instead of the Peachtree, so those don't quite can't quite be hooked up. But now the three are basically linked.
Yeah. Yeah, I always point out that I've done this before. You can fly into Atlanta. Get off the plane inside the airport, get on the MARTA, the train, take the MARTA to Peachtree Center inside that complex, leave the MARTA station, and you're in the food court. You can go to the food court, those three hotels, and then spend the whole weekend there, get back on the train, and fly back home, never having gone outside.
Given what the weather in Atlanta is like in August, that's usually a good thing.
Remember when it used to be on July 4th weekend? That was in some cases even worse.
Yeah. Yeah. I only actually went to Dragon Con, I think, once when it was on July 4th. I had a dinner. My agent had a dinner for all of the clients who were involved last year. And just the act of walking to the restaurant, I was drenched in sweat.
Yeah.
It's horrible weather. So, yeah. I mean, being able to stay in the air conditioning as much as you possibly can is a blessing, even though the air conditioning is fighting against the many, many crowds of people. That's the other thing. I mean, you have to budget yourself with a ridiculous amount of time to get anywhere because it's so spread out and because it's so crowded. And on top of the crowds you have there, it's not a place to go if you are agoraphobic.
Yeah.
Tons and tons of people, and they don't move very fast, and they tend to stop and take pictures of people in costumes, of which there are many.
Right, and sometimes the costumes make them move very slowly, too, and so there's just all kinds of things slowing people down and clogging it up. You know, I was going to say, it's hard to get a real count of how many people, because there's like the official count, and then the story, you know, the sort of unofficial story has always been that they vastly underestimate the number for various reasons that we probably shouldn't go into. And so there's anywhere between 35 and 50,000 people probably, which, you know, it's one thing to say, you know, four or five big hotels, but then you put enough people to fill up a football stadium and suddenly it gets very crowded very quickly.
Yeah. It's weird. It's like, it's the only convention of its size that I know of that doesn't use a convention center.
Yeah. That's
which is both good and bad. You know, it's on the one hand, you could probably use the space, although, you know, going to the apparel mart will probably help.
And they've done that before. I mean, several years ago, they had stuff over in there, and then they kind of moved it out as they added new hotels. But it's grown so much that they've added all the new hotels, and they still need that space back. So,
yeah. But it's still, I mean, what's fun about it is that you still, there's so much to see and do.
Mm-hmm.
Such a wonderful variety of types of things to do if you can put up with the crowds, which, you know, is a factor for some.
Well, tell me this. I hadn't thought to note this before, but since we're talking about the different tracks that they have like, you know, a constantly evolving set of independent tracks, each one of which is like a small or medium sized convention. What are probably the two or three that you end up spending the most time in?
Oh, it's more than two or three. Mm-hmm. Late the last couple of years, I've done stuff on the podcasting track because I've been doing more podcasting. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've been a presenter at the Parsec cool. Awards last year, which was actually they had one of the ones I'm involved with is an audio drama called HG World, which actually won a Parsec a couple of years ago. And me and one of the other voice actors from that were presenting together, and we got to do it, and we did it in character. as the characters we play on HG World, which was fun. I spend a lot of time on that. I spend a lot of time on what is now, they're now two separate tracks for American SFTV, one for classics and one for not so classic.
Yeah.
Currently, the line of demarcation is the turn of the millennium. If it was before 2000, it's classic. If it's after 2000, it's classic. Mm-hmm. But I spend a lot of time at both of those because I've done a lot of TV tie-ins, so that's a natural place to be. Star Trek track, obviously. That's I've done a lot of Star Trek stuff. There's three literature-based tracks. There's one just called Science Fiction Literature. There's a writer's track, and there's a YA track that I spent a lot of time on. For that matter, the Whedonverse track, which used to be the Buffy track,
mm-hmm.
and it's just sort of evolved into all things that Joss Whedon does. And I've done a lot of, you know, between Serenity, Buffy, I've done a lot of stuff related to TV and things like that. And occasionally on the horror track. It's not actually called the horror track. I don't remember what they call it now, but I've done some stuff on there too. So I tend to jump around a lot, which is cool. It's fun. Yeah.
Hey,
although it must be a nightmare for the people trying to make
money. Yeah, I know the feeling. Yeah, I usually end up doing between 16 and 18 panels and events every year, and they're very spread out, just like you. Mine, they have split science fiction literature into science fiction literature and fantasy literature. I imagine I'll be end up much more in science fiction literature. That's Sue Phillips' track. The comics track has always brought me in to do.
God, I didn't even remember.
Yeah, comics track. You know, I've hosted Jeopardy, the Marvel versus DC Jeopardy, in that track for 12 or 13 years now, I guess at least. The SFTV classics, Joe Crow, and it used to be Ron Nastrom, but now it's Joe Crow and Gary Mitchell's track is, like you say, it's great. Doing things like.
Honestly, last year I probably had the most fun
there. Yeah, the Anthony Taylor and I did a Space 1999 panel a couple of years ago. That the place was overflowing. I was so gratified that there were that many people that had fond memories of one of my favorite shows. It's usually very demeaned and maligned.
Yeah.
And then alternate history I've been doing some stuff with. And like you say, the podcasting, because I've been doing a lot of podcasting last year or two. And the writer's track. The writer's track is a lot of fun because you get to hobnob with big names like you and others, which is very exciting. You know, I'm sitting up there with you and I've been doing stuff with John Ringo for years. We're kind of arch enemies, or at least from my perspective, he probably barely remembers me. Timothy Zahn and Kevin J. Anderson and some of that crowd. I mean, that was really fun last year getting to do a panel or two with that whole bunch. So, it's a nice variety of tracks, and it certainly does. Your days are full. You're not sitting around bored ever at Dragon Con.
Yeah. No. And even if you do have some downtime, there's plenty of things to get.
Absolutely.
Dealer's room. You know, there's the autograph section. There's the Walk of Fame. I like just wandering around the Walk of Fame. Usually try to find the actors who don't have lines and go talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gotten, some of them are ones I know, I know a bunch of them. I've gone to talk and chat with, like, especially the Farscape artists, actors rather, because I've done a lot of Farscape.
Yeah.
And I know pretty much the entire cast at this point. A couple of others here and there. Some of the Deep Space Nine actors I've gotten to know over the years. Dean Hagelin, that I was on a radio show with, and was so just getting over to sit and chat with them. And some of them, just getting to meet them is cool. You know, one of the highlights for me last year was getting to meet Saul Rubinek.
Yeah.
I've been a fan of his for ages.
You know, there was my Dragon Con experience kind of is divided in two. From about 1995 when I first started going until like the mid 2000s, I was just paying to go and just having fun. I would do a few panels as what they call a program participant, but I would wear costumes. I had my John Sheridan costume. I later had a Galen costume from Crusade. And my most successful costume, which I'll mention in a little bit, was my Ali G costume, the cheapest one ever. But then, you know, in 2008, I started getting invited as a guest, and I figured, well, I probably should be a little more professional and cut out the costumes a little bit. But before that, back when my friends and I were just going, I was meeting all the Babylon 5 actors and various people like that. So I got tons of autographs from all of them. So it's interesting. There was sort of two different experiences I've had. There was the going and getting autographs and meeting people's period, wearing costumes. And now I've gotten to have a few years on the other side being kind of a guest and doing a lot more panels. And, you know, it's been interesting to see it from both perspectives, and it's a lot of fun. So, it's nice not to have to pay anymore. That's for sure.
Yes. Yes, I mean between the airfare and the especially the hotel, it's expensive enough.
Yeah, man. Last year, here's my first memory. Is last year, I did like the super discount thanks to some friends. I was able to get an airline ticket from St. Louis down there randomly for like $100. It's like the cheapest I've ever paid for a ticket on Labor Day weekend.
Wow.
It's crazy. And I stayed at my co-writer Bobby Polite's house. And he and Larry Davis, friends, were able to drive me down. And so I did like the whole Dragon Con experience for like $150.
Wow. Yeah, we amortized costs by basically sharing our hotel room with people. So there were four of us paying for the room, which helped immensely. And I was selling books.
Right.
So that made back at least some of the hotel costs. The airline we just figured was a sunk cost.
Yeah. Yeah, I generally don't sell much at Dragon Con. I mean, I don't get a table because there's just no way I'm going to try to have a table while all that's going on. I sell a few things maybe between panels, but it's hard to carry them around too, especially when I'm carrying around props for various, you know, Jeopardy things and all. So, yeah, I kind of look at it as whatever it ends up costing to go is like a promotional expense and just write it off on the taxes or something. So.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's dig into some of our categories here. We've got I came up with some categories, and I've got a few things, and I want to see what you think. We can just kind of bounce back and forth or whatever, see how whatever works. First up is sort of favorite good memories. What are just some memories that give you warm and fuzzies to think back to that you did this or you saw this or you were part of this at Dragon Con?
Two that tend to stick in my head in particular. One was just one of the first years I was at Dragon Con, I think it was in 98 or 99, was seeing Harlan Ellison, who was mildly pissed at me at the time, which is for Harlan, having him only be mildly pissed at you means you're doing okay. And I basically went up to him and he yelled at me for a second, but he also knew my wife at the time, and she wanted to say hi for him, so I said hi to him and kissed him on the top of the head in front of a room and that actually calmed him down a little bit. And then he yelled at me for the infraction that I had committed. I apologized and all was well. But the part where I got to kiss him on the top of the head in front of a room full of people is a memory I will cherish forever. Another one actually was in 2008. Dragon Con, as we said, is held Memorial Day weekend in 2008. You may recall there was an election there. And one that was quite on everyone's mind, given and this was before the economy tanked. It was before we really understood just what a disaster Sarah Palin was, and because she had only just been announced as the running mate like 2 weeks before. And I'm in at a room party with Peter David, George Takei, and Walter Koenig.
Okay.
And the four of us are standing there talking about the election. It was surreal on the one hand. On the other hand, it was a really great, really in-depth conversation. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I came out of that, I insisted at the time, and I look really smart now saying it, was that Barack Obama was going to win in a landslide, which he did. And this is, like I said, this was before the economy tanked and before it became clear that the McCain-Palin campaign was being run by the Keystone Cops. And, I mean, honestly, they could have, you know, they could have propped up a crash test dummy to run against McCain and Palin, and the crash test dummy probably would have won. But even then, just based on the overwhelming response at the primaries for the Democratic candidates versus the relatively low turnout for the Republican candidates, plus the fact that I really think the country was ready for a non-white president finally. Peter did not agree with me. Peter thought that the American people weren't ready for that, and that McCain was going to win. He told me later that it was the first time in his life he was glad to be wrong. But just talking about the election with these two guys who I've been watching on TV since I was a kid. Peter's been a good friend for years, but. You know, the just getting to do that was just, on the one hand, completely ridiculous and really cool. You know.
Well, let's see. I've got a couple. Similarly, I went to a panel with Peter David and Harlan Ellison one time several years ago. And it was funny because we were in a room that there was already a piano in for some other purpose. And The panel was supposed to be like, you know, writing for science fiction TV or something like that. And they sat down, they said about two words, looked over, saw the piano and said, oh, screw it. And they went over and they sang and played show tunes the entire hour. And we were in the audience just kind of dumbfounded. And I mean, it was just like the two of them in a room. It's like they just totally ignored us, and they were just like going at each other, playing the songs and singing. And at one point, one of them—I forget which—because when the two of them are together, they almost seem like the same person. But at one point, they stopped and looked at us and says, "Y'all are cool with this, right?" And everybody's like, "Yeah," because you know, I'm sitting here thinking, how many times can you see a here's what it's like to write Star Trek versus these two guys doing show tunes. It was a unique thing, and I felt very lucky to be there. There were a couple of people like, well, I thought we were going to talk about writing. I'm like, there's 8,000 panels on writing, you know, sci-fi. This is something special. Enjoy, you know?
Yeah.
I guess another cool moment was, you know, one of my childhood heroes was George Perez. And I had been communicating with him a little bit on email before I ever met him about 10 or 12 years ago, because we were going to get him to sign a poster for charity and do some stuff for the comics track. And I still thought, well, he's not going to know who I am or anything. And I came up to him at his table the very first time, and he was, you know, madly sketching away. And I was like, Mr. Perez, I'm Van Plexico. And he jumps up and goes and spreads his arms wide and goes, Van, and hugs me. And I was just like, it's hugging me. So that's just one of those moments. It's funny too, because different people are celebrities to different people in different ways. And most people I know, if I said George Perez, they wouldn't know who that was. But the people that know, you know, I tell that story to them, they're like, wow, that's cool. So,
although anybody who's actually met George or known George for any length of time isn't at all surprised by that story, because that's George. Yeah. You know, he's one of the absolute sweetest guys.
Yes.
And he'll remember you if you know. I mean, I got to know him when I edited the Marvel novels, because he did some illustrations for that. And so I tend to get the same response from him also, you know, if you're a friend of George's, the world will know. Because, you know, he is not a
No, he's big and bold and loud. That's great.
Oh, yeah. And a joy to work with also.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Another more interesting moments was, I was at, this was in 2009, think, recently anyway, Ben Browder was there. And it was his first time at DragonCon. He'd been to San Diego plenty of times. He'd done a bunch of creation shows, but he'd never actually been to DragonCon. And it was, I first met Ben when I did a Farscape novel back in 2001. He actually knew who I was, which was weird. Because the actors don't always pay attention to the guys who write the tie-in fiction, but Ben did. And you know, we've been at a bunch of other conventions since then. And like I said, it was his first time at DragonCon. He was really overwhelmed by it because he was used to conventions like San Diego, where it was big and massive, and there was sort of like you on one, like him on the stage and people out in the audience, or you know, him behind the table in the dealer's room and audience out there. Used to that. He was used to smaller conventions. He'd been to things like Polaris up in Toronto and you know, some of the smaller creation conventions where, you know, there aren't as many people by comparison, so you're sort of wandering around and interacting more directly with people. But DragonCon was this weird hybrid of that because it was the same size as San Diego, well, not quite the same size as San Diego, the same type of huge monster, massive convention, but it still got that intimate, you can walk up to somebody and talk to them thing. In fact, somebody did while we were chatting by the elevator. And he was, I mean, he liked it, but he was a little freaked out by it because, like, he had mentally adjusted for San Diego mode and found himself in small fan run convention mode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you still there?
There was another one way back in 98. To give you an idea how long ago this was, there was a Hercules and Xena track.
Hercules and Xena track. Awesome.
Well, in 1998, it needed one. And
that's right. I remember.
Steve Spears, who was one of the executive producers, basically invited a bunch of people, a bunch of the people involved with the Xena track, out to dinner on the last night of the show. And just getting to sit there and chat with Steve was great. He was always, you know, incredibly friendly and open, talking about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He was a joy to. He was fun to hang out with. I haven't actually. I know he's working on. I think he's animating. But he was a good guy. He was a good guy to have at conventions. One other cool thing. This was from back around 1999 or so, 2000 thereabouts. Tim Minear and Jana Svensson. Who were writers for Buffy and Angel at the time. That was their first real convention experience where somebody knew who they were. They're TV writers. They're not used to people even knowing their names. And here were all these fans who were, like, intimately familiar with which episodes they'd written and were, you know, knew specifically what they'd done and we're asking them very writer-specific questions, and as TV writers, they're not used to that. it's more common now, I think, partly because the internet allows for such things. But you know, in around the turn of the millennium, that was unusual for them, and they were just completely blown away by it. It was me, Chris Golden, and Tim and Jane on a panel together, just talking about writing for the Buffy and Angel characters. And you know, afterward, they're both looking at me. It's like, wow, this is cool.
You know, a similar thing in a much smaller way. You're right about around the turn of millennium is when people, you know, because of the internet started to recognize people that were otherwise obscure. I'm kind of an example because, you know, back in the late 90s, I was mostly known for having the AvengersAssemble.net website, and it's still out there, but I just never do anything with it anymore because I got my own career now, and I just don't really.
And it's not like anybody cares about
it. I know. It was kind of stupid of me to. I said I should have just asked Marvel if they wanted the domain for like $20,000 or something. But anyway. But yeah, I actually would have people come up to me at Dragon Con, look at my badge for a second at the name, and then go, "You're Van Plexico from the Avengers site," and. That even happened in Singapore one time when I was in a comic shop.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's when you realize that you can be a tiny little micro celebrity to a very small segment of people to whom such things matter, you know. So the other one I wanted to mention while we're on this, and if there's any others you want to include, Was last year I got asked by the American TV Sci-Fi Classics guys to be the moderator for Bruce Boxleitner and Mira Furlan, and I had met Mira before. In fact, she's one of the people that my little girl is named for. And but I had never gotten to meet Bruce. And of course, I have a Babylon 5 costume that's Sheridan, and I ran the Babylon 5 LARP for 3 years at Dragon Con as Sheridan, you know, but I'd never actually gotten to meet him. And so when I got asked, I immediately was like, yes, 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 I want to do it. And then for like the next 3 months, I'm like, oh Lord, oh God, oh no, I'm going to be sitting here with them. And it's funny how I could have probably met any number of other much bigger, supposedly Hollywood celebrities and would have been very casual about it. But it's what it matters to you. You know, it's how it strikes you personally. Right. I was just a nervous wreck. And they were going to be, they decided to do two panels with them on two different days. And so Gary and Joe asked me if I wanted to host the other one too. And I'm like, no, one is all I can take. I'll get through the first one and then I'll, you know, but I got to tell this real quick story out of it. I introduced them. We had a huge crowd too. I was very excited, but I introduced them. I said, you know, I would not be any more excited if it was Barack and Michelle up here. And they kind of look at each other like, oh, right, really, what? And I said, because they're only the president and first lady of the United States. You know, you two are the president and first lady of the galaxy. And the place kind of went erupted. Everybody was, you know, cheering and everything. And so I was very happy that that kind of went over, kind of loosened things up a little bit at the beginning. So,
yeah.
Any other good memories before we get to the bad and or annoying memories?
Oh God!
I know.
You know, it narrowing it down is actually 2005. Mm-hmm. That was right after DragonCon happened right after Hurricane Katrina. Mm-hmm. And the initial reaction was the fact that thanks to the hurricane, the price of the cab I took I took the train down that year, and the price of the cab from the train station was almost as much as the train ticket, because gas prices in the South were through the roof. Right after the hurricane, but several of the actors, I remember Adam Baldwin definitely did, and a bunch of others, were giving all the money they made off of signed stills and whatnot to the Red Cross or to other relief efforts, which was just and a bunch of actors did that. Adam was the first one I took note of doing that, but then as I walked around the Walk of Fame that year, I noticed a whole lot of other people were doing that as well, which I thought was just a really cool little thing. I mean, it had literally just happened. It was only like a week after the mm-hmm. hurricane when DragonCon was. And, just the outpouring of support was really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's always cool when the fan and the professional community can kind of come together behind something like that. I remember that very well. I was flying back from Singapore while the hurricane was hitting, and so – it took like 35 hours to get back home because there was a typhoon hitting Tokyo and I couldn't land at Narita in Tokyo for like 6 hours. And then we were trying to land in Dallas and the hurricane was hitting New Orleans. So they had to reroute us to Chicago. So it was just a crazy, crazy business. I didn't even know what was going on until it had already happened, you know, cause they weren't really talking about it in Singapore. So.
Yeah. There was also, one year when I had an audience, and this is like, might have been 05 also, or it might have been later, it was 09, I went to go to my autographing, and, you know, I'd done a bunch of autographings before at Dragon Con, but they usually the only time I had a really long line was in 05 when Dragon Con happened right when the novelization for Serenity had come out, but the movie hadn't been released yet. And I did a promotional thing with Simon and Schuster. They gave me 25 copies of Serenity to give away to the first 25 people who came to my autograph. So yeah, I got a line. And those went fast. Especially since, and they still went fast, even though they scheduled my autographing for the same time as the parade.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty cool.
And there were several people who were of two minds as to what they wanted to go to. That was a special case. And then in 09, I show up for my autographing, and there's this huge line, and I figure it's got to be for somebody else, and it was for me. And, you know, I've done tons of autographing. That was the only time before or since that I'd had that kind of response to me signing books for people. I was thrilled. You know, it was a really nice feeling, but it was just completely, I was not expecting that at all. And it kind of, you know, and like I said, that didn't happen last year. Last year I was right next to Brandon Sanderson, so he had the long run.
Well,
And so I joked that I was right next to him, so I joked that I got his sloppy seconds because people would walk over to pass my table when they were leaving after they got a signature. And I'd hold up Dragon Precinct and I'd say, "Hey, if you like the Wheel of Time, you should buy Dragon Precinct. It's just like that, only much shorter."
And it doesn't require like 17 previous huge volumes to understand it.
Exactly. And hey, I made a couple sales.
All right, there you go. Yeah. All right, well, let's transition over into a few bad or annoying memories, and then we got some other good stuff coming up, but we got to touch on a couple of things. I got to point out that we were having the 10th anniversary of Marvel DC Jeopardy, and I used to host it using PowerPoint. I had like an interactive program that I used, and I needed a video projector, and I would always bring my laptop, but I always needed Dragon Con to provide a projector and a screen. Well, you know, there always have been adventures every year with that, because trying to get Dragon Con to provide your logistics is really a crapshoot every year. Well, and it was the 10th anniversary. We had a big crowd standing by, and Steve Rude of Nexus fame was doing his panel in our room right before us. And so when George Kopech, my longtime partner, co-host, and I, assistant, when we got there, Rude was just wrapping up, and I looked around, and there was no projector, and I found one of the technical support guys, and I said, "There's supposed to be a projector here for the next panel." And he goes, "Oh, they brought that 5 minutes ago, and Rude said he didn't want it and told him to send it back."
Oh.
And we could not get it back, and we all basically had to cancel. We ended up just doing like some throw questions out to the crowd, but I had like all these obscure character pictures in it, you know, identify the human top, you know, or the human fly or whatever.
Right.
I was crushed. So, and the people that came that year thought, well, this is kind of a lame track, you know, or whatever, or lame event.
Yeah,
but yeah, so that was kind of bad. And so I still say, "Damn you, Steve Rude. I appreciate all the Nexus comics, but damn you." Let me throw one more, and then I want to see what you got. I've actually lost a couple of tournaments myself because the host and or the judge didn't know the material as well as I did and said I was wrong when I was right. That's infuriating.
Oh.
Yeah, that always happens. It's infuriating. And I guess the other one is at 2000, we had the biggest Babylon 5 LARP live action role play ever. And we had everybody in costume, and my two partners and I had spent like months preparing this intricate scenario. And we had Universe Today newspaper copies to give out to everybody. And we had it all set up to do the council, and we had a mystery thing going. It was like a mystery dinner theater thing almost. It was interactive. It was this awesome thing. And life imitating art, at the end, we practically had a brawl between the alien delegate, the alien ambassadors. And there I am, dressed as John Sheridan, because I'm the host of the event, right, having to step in between them and diffuse and calm everybody down. And I'm thinking, yeah, here's Sheridan standing in between the between the alien ambassadors calling everything down. So, yeah, it was kind of surreal, right, to have to have it play out that way. But, oh, well. Well, that's all the bad memories I really want to go into. What have you got for us?
The only one that was really there's two okay. bad experiences. One was in my first ever Dragon Con, actually. In 1988, I was part of a band called the Don't Quit Your Day Job Players, and we in 1998 we did what we called the Pros and Cons Tour, where we were basically going to a bunch of science fiction conventions and playing at them. We were musical guests of honor at a bunch of smaller conventions. You know, some regional ones and such like that. And we were also, we got invited to go to Dragon Con. And one of the reasons why Dragon Con was an appealing option for us is we had heard all these great things about the Dragon Con music track. you know, they got huge crowds for them all the time. Lots of different acts, you know, performed there. There were always, you know, we saw all these pictures of bands that got, you know, huge audiences and such. And they treated their musicians well, so, you know, great. So we go and do that. They gave us a slot at, like, 2 in the afternoon, and there was nobody there. Turned out that was the year they were trying something different. It used to be music acts were all in the evening, where there was less, there wasn't as much programming going on. You know, this was like I said, this is in 98, so it was before it had expanded to the point where there was, like, 800 different things in the program at all times. And so they wanted to run them out throughout the entire day because they were getting so many musicians in, but the result was, unless you were performing at night, nobody showed up.
Right.
So we got like 12 people in the audience. You know.
That sounds like one of my readings.
I've had that. Well, there was one year where they didn't give me a reading until they scheduled it at the last minute, so it wasn't in the
Oh, that's event. A death sentence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Two people showed up. And they were both friends of mine who I told about it, you know. But the other one was I was – this was a case of something where I actually got kicked off of a panel. The Buffy track was doing – this is in 06, I think. They wanted to do back in 1999. I wrote a book called The Xander Years. It was a novelization of several Xander focused episodes of Buffy. And Nicholas Brendon, who played Xander, was at Dragon Con that year. And so the Buffy track put something together where they wanted to do basically me and Nick Brendon together to talk about the character of Xander. It was basically me interviewing Nick for all intents and purposes. I show up at the room. Nick hasn't gotten there yet. Room's packed, of course, because, you know, there's an actor on the panel. So that's what puts bums in seats, as it were. And I'm vamping for the crowd for a bit, waiting for Nick to get there. He shows up along with his handler. Nick comes over to the table. I've introduced myself. We talk for a bit. The conversation makes it abundantly clear that my purpose there is to be a straight man, which I'm perfectly okay with. And, you know, I figure, okay, this is going to go well. And then the track director says she needs to talk to me for a second and to bring my bag with me. Basically, Nick's handler announced that Mr. Brendon does not actually do Q&As with other people. he only does single person Q&As and get that filthy writer out of it. Say that, but that's what it boiled down
right.
to.
Wow, man.
But this is somebody, the handler, who I will not name in the interest of not being a dick, is somebody who I know and who I have, like, spent time with socially at parties of mutual friends and such. And yet, that was
that is pretty strange. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was no big deal, because honestly, my first response when I sit on the panel is, what the hell do you need to do for? And so it wasn't as big a deal as if it had been something else. But damn, yeah. I mean,
That's pretty awkward and pretty sort of ham-fisted, it seems like. Once it's already started and you're late and everything, dude. You know, that's...
Yeah, and Trisha Williams was the person running the track that year, and she was abject in her apology. She had no idea that was going to happen, and I didn't, you know... I did not blame her. I still don't, I don't blame her in the least. It wasn't her.
Sure.
And the person who was handling Nick Brendon, this isn't the only time something like that has happened with that person.
Yeah.
So what are you going
to
do?
Well, let's leave
it. It's any time to go to the
there you go. That's always a nice little bonus extra time. Well, let's leave the unpleasantness behind. Just what are a couple, two or three things that you like to do at Dragon Con other than, you know, do panels or meet people or whatever?
There's stuff besides. I mean, it's just generally the social aspect of it is really – I like the fact that it's basically – one big,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I said, Go and New York Comic Con tend to be very impersonal. Dragon Con lends itself more to, you know, casual hanging out.
Dragon Con's like Mardi Gras for 4 days.
Yeah, geeky Mardi Gras. But it's, you know, that's certainly something that I enjoy. I mean, most of what I do there does relate to, you know, doing panels and.
Mm-hmm.
But the just being able and even like being able to talk to, you know, theoretically, you know, big name actors who are just sitting there behind the table chatting
yeah.
with you.
Yeah.
You know. It's even in the Walk of Fame, there's much less of it's not so much an attitude of keep the line moving and, you know. I mean, some of the actors are like that, obviously, and there's always different stuff. But the vast majority of them are perfectly happy to like have a conversation with you. It's a situation where the actors are much more like, you know, all the celebrities really, not just actors, but you know, other writers and such are basically just
yeah.
people. Hell, I've gotten to get drunk with a lot of people who I've watched on
yeah.
television.
That's yeah. cool. I guess the two or three little things over the years that I've developed habits of what I like to do, the Hyatt in their main atrium, which used to be the big hangout, it's kind of moved over to the Marriott. But, you know, I like to go to the Hyatt buffet where you can sit and eat and just see right out into the whole atrium there. And you can just sit there and eat really good food usually and watch yeah. Just these, you know, it's right next to the escalator. So you just see this steady stream of all these people in these amazing costumes coming up and down the escalators and coming yeah. through. That's a fun place to go.
Yeah. Well, yeah, just generally the people watching, you can do people watching pretty yeah. much anywhere. You just pick a spot, sit,
oh,
and
sure.
watch, you know, because the level of costuming is...
It is amazing, yeah.
And it's great fun to just watch the parade of people as they go by.
Yeah.
It's funny, actually, I was at the Hyatt in Atlanta in 2001 for Peter David and Kathleen O'Shea's wedding.
Yeah.
They got married in Atlanta because that's where Kathleen's mm-hmm. from, and that was the Hyatt was the you know the hotel they got a block in for people to stay in. I'd never been in that hotel when it was empty. It was weird. I could see the floor.
Yeah.
It was very strange. That always is. Because yeah, I mean that hotel is always just such a
yeah. Food. Well, it's
Even if you get there like Thursday night, everybody's already there.
It's gotten different the last two or three years because really everything has moved over to the Marriott more, and that's kind of strange. I guess it's got a little more room. It's got those multiple layer levels, you know, those tiers.
Yeah, and the bar area up in the mezzanine level is a much more open hangout
yeah.
space. The Hyatt really gets filled capacity.
And the Hyatt I don't think they've always given me the sense, and I'll give you a story in just a second, of that they don't really particularly like having people in their atrium there. They're always trying to get people to move along, clear out of the circle, move along, you know. So whatever it was, if they did in the last couple of years, they have certainly succeeded in moving people out of there. It's different than it was, but.
Well, they also remodeled it. And
yeah.
Less conducive. Also, I mean, I really don't like the new design.
Yeah.
Of the
and they totally redid the Marriott. It's crazy. It's totally funky with all the labyrinthine hallways and everything.
Yeah.
The other thing they like to do, Robot Battles has their big final 2 or 3 hour event on Monday, usually around 10, 11, 12 o'clock. And I used to like to go and I'd take Maddie, my stepdaughter, when she was a little bit younger and watch the robot battles. I'm looking forward to getting to take Mira, my little one, to see the robot battles. It's just a lot of fun. It's a very crowd interactive thing. And I tell you, Kelly Lockhart, that's the host of that. I've learned a lot over the years about how to be a good MC when I do like Jeopardy or SmackDown, because he's very
right.
good at interacting with the crowd, being funny, being wacky, keeping everybody entertained between events, you know. And so, he's become kind of a friend too, but he was a very good, you know, person to watch just to see how to entertain a crowd when you're having to do an event like that. So that's fun. And then the other two things that go on that I like is it's kind of cool how they've started doing these football games at the Georgia Dome the same weekend, because for one thing, you get the football fans kind of crossing paths with the Klingons and the Stormtroopers and the, you know, all that, and the Princess Leia slave girls, which is always entertaining.
Right.
And when
oh, yeah.
it's my team, like it was last year, that's one of my little strange stories I'm going to tell is last year I had a panel at like 10 o'clock and I had a panel at like 6, and the game was from like 7 to 11. And so I had tickets, and so I did a panel, ran screaming out of the room, jogged across to the Georgia Dome, got my ticket, saw the first half of the game, but Sue needed me back for that 10 o'clock panel, so I left at halftime, ran all the way back to the Hyatt, and got there right before the panel started. But I still had to admit I was sitting there with my phone in my lap, kind of looking down, checking the score. So it is kind of neat to have, you know, a big sports weekend. I always say it's the thing that I hate the most about Dragon Con is its opening weekend for college football. I mean, you know me, yeah. I'm 50% this Dragon Con type stuff, and I'm 50% college football. And I've got, you know, I've got a very well-selling couple of books in both worlds. And so I try to do both, and it's kind of tough that, you know, Auburn's opening week game is always at the same time. I got to this because we're about to get into the strange but true events now, and I'll go ahead and throw another one. In 2003, Southern Cal was playing at Auburn, and I thought, they're never going to come back to Auburn, Alabama in my lifetime. This is a chance to see one of the five, you know, big major programs play in my stadium where I went to school and everything. And so – but it's Saturday afternoon, which is the heart of Dragon Con. So right. I made sure I had no panels during those like 6 hours. And we got in the car and drove to Auburn and went to the game. They slaughtered us. They shut us out. We got sunburned. We came back. We walked into the Hyatt at about midnight. And it was still, of course, totally packed and crowded. I've got my Auburn gear on instead of my Dragon Con gear. And we're trying to get through that big crowd in the atrium of the Hyatt to get to the elevators or something. I think we were staying there that year. And I had an Auburn hat, Auburn shirt on, everything. And in the middle of this press of the crowd, this Lord of the Rings orc in full makeup like he just stepped out of the movie. No, it was an elf. He was an elf, a Lord of the Rings elf. But he was like a Hawaiian guy, kind of a Samoan-looking big dude, you know. But he was just awesome in his costume. And he looks at me and he goes, "Go Trojans." I'm like, even the elves are making fun of me for this. Come on. So that was kind of a surreal thing to have to get punked by a Southern Cal elf.
Yes. I don't know. I mean, the problem is strange but true is pretty much the order of the day with Dragon Con, you know?
Yeah.
One of the earlier examples probably, you know, fits the bill particularly well. It's you know, getting into a political discussion with Mr. Sulu.
That's awesome.
and stuff like that. And for that matter, getting, you know, kicked off my own panel. I've bumped into people I didn't expect to see occasionally, but you know, there really isn't anything like major.
Well, let me throw a few more at you. This is like the category that for me, I'm just sitting here typing them up the other day, and I just keep thinking of more and more. I don't know what it is about me, but I've had some very, very surreal, strange experiences at Dragon Con. So I'm gonna just run through a few, and then if you think of any others, you can add on.
Oh, actually, I can think of one. It didn't become strange but true until later when I realized what it was. At the Parsec Awards last year, one of the two hosts was like this really big name in podcasting, apparently. I can't even tell you now who it was, to be perfectly honest, because I'm not big on the podcasting intelligentsia. I know the people I work with, you know. I'm part of the Chronic Roof Network, and I know the people who do that and a couple of the audio drama people. But I'm not really plugged into the community as thoroughly as I might be. So I had no idea that this guy was anybody particularly important. And also, you know, it's the podcasting community. Like, I say this as a podcaster, you know. I mean, this is a bunch of people having fun. I don't, you know.
Sure.
But apparently he mispronounced my name, and I made a casual, offhand, very obviously not serious, obnoxious remark at him. And next to me, Jay Smith, who is the writer and all-around godlike being for HG World, is like sweating bullets. It's like, you just mouthed off at whoever this guy was. And it's like, we're never going to get another part again. Yeah. I'm like, all right, sorry. That was kind of a But, you know. One thing, it's not so much strange but true, but it's one of those things where the technology actually, you told your horror story before about the lack of a projector. One case where the technology actually worked and worked really well was joint panel. They did a whole series of joint panels that happened at Worldcon and DragonCon together, where they had half the panel at Worldcon, half the panel at DragonCon, and two audiences and everybody talking at once. Well, not at once, but you know, doing basically the same panel in two different locations. It was a media tie-in panel with me, Peter David, David Gerald, Mike Stackpole, Richard Lee Byers, Joe Haldeman, Matt Forbeck.
Wow.
And there may have been somebody else as well. The last person who I'm not remembering now was also at the at WorldCon. But yeah, it was Joe, Richard, Matt, and somebody else. Damn. I can't remember who the last person was. And I'm sure it's somebody who's like a good friend of mine who is gonna like be pissed at me now. But and it was me, Peter, Mike, and David at DragonCon. That went really well. I was pleasantly surprised at how well that went. Oh, and another strange but true moment. I'm also with a band called the Boogie Knights, and it was actually at DragonCon that I approached the band and say, "Hey, how would you like to have a percussionist?" Because it was in 2005. I had seen them a couple times before, and I'm sitting there and I'm watching them. And I, like I said, I was with a band called the Don't Quit Your Day Job Players throughout the 90s, and that band broke up in 2000. I hadn't really found another band, so I'm a percussionist without a band, and I'm watching these guys, and they're really good, beautiful harmonies, really good guitar playing, but they had a love-hate relationship with tempo. And I'm thinking, I'm a percussionist without a band. They're a band who obviously needs a percussionist.
There you go.
Chocolate, peanut butter, here we go. So I approach them afterward and say, you know, hey, how'd you like to have a percussionist? And so they were doing open folk afterward, and I joined them for that, you know, doing some percussion just so they could see me in action, as it were. And then I joned the group after that. We played at DragonCon the following year in 06. And at one point I look around and realize that in the audience are both Peter David and Robert Asprin.
Hmm.
And there's me on stage. And I'm thinking just the collective number of books sold among the three of us.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Robert Asprin actually was a big fan of ours. And I remember after that show in 06, basically him just hanging out with us and chatting and stuff. And he was just being, you know, a fan of ours. He could have been anybody. And that's, you know, Robert Asprin. That was really tremendous. It was really, really sorry when.
Right, that's right.
But he was, just having him just be there, being a fan of the Boogie Nights was definitely special. That sort of thing can happen a lot at Dragon Con, where it's like, you know, you wind up seeing people who you didn't expect to, like, be fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people you think of as professionals, but are also fans who, like, they get to meet somebody.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. No, yeah. Well, let me throw a few of mine. This one is kind of bizarre, and I probably shouldn't lead off with it, but, I've got to, this one's really short. It's like 1999 or 2000, and I was over near the Walk of Fame or whatever. I go into a restroom, I'm standing there at the urinal, a guy walks up right next to me. And so you're always kind of curious, somebody walks up right next to you, maybe that's somebody that you know that's messing with you or something. So I looked up, and it was John DeLancey.
Oh,
and
God.
I immediately realized I peed with Q. That's the whole story. I peed with Q. There you go. And
congratulations.
Let me see. There was an incident probably about 2000, 2001, where my girlfriend and I that you knew at the time, and we were going around, you know, getting pictures with various Babylon 5 type celebrities we were into at the time. And we saw a certain star of a certain Babylon 5 spinoff, and there was a woman with him. And we're like, oh, that's one of our favorite actors and characters. And so we ran over, and my girlfriend had her camera, and we're like, can we get our picture with you? And he's like, and he's very, like, turning red, and he's embarrassed and everything. Like, well, just quick picture. And so the lady that was with him took the camera, and we got our picture with him, but he was clearly sweating bullets, very nervous. She gave it back, And then the two of them walk off out of the hotel, and my girlfriend and I looked at each other, and we both went, "That was a hooker." Yep.
Yeah.
Moving on. Here is my one more. My favorite Andreas Katsulas event that I was there to witness.
They had
been doing after a panel that he did, and he was always kind of in a grouchy kind of mood anyway, because he was Andreas Katsulas. That was Jakar on Babylon 5, for those who don't know. When the panel was over, the people announced, "We're going to have a charity auction for various so-and-so Babylon 5 events to benefit like the Red Cross or something in this room here in like 2 hours or something." And so the crowd starts to get up and leave, and Andreas pulls out a poster and he writes his name on it and says, "Well, I'm going to have an auction right now for this poster." And everybody kind of looks at each other, and this young lady in the front very innocently goes, "Oh, well, who's your charity?" And he goes, "Charity?" He just wanted a couple of bucks.
Yeah.
And then he gets mad and stomps out and leaves. I thought that was funny.
It's a secondhand, strange but true story, but also involves Andreas. Mm-hmm. He actually, at one DragonCon, basically started grilling Kathleen O'Shea before she was still Kathleen O'Shea, basically to make sure she was good enough.
I feel like I've heard this story before from somebody else.
Well, Kathleen is not shy about because she always thought it was awesome.
I think I heard it from her. Yeah, I think you're right. That's Peter David's current wife, right? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Just so the listeners know who we're talking about. Yes. Yeah, she's told that story before when I've been on a show with her, that he kind of goes down a list of things to make sure he was
there's also just the people I've been on panels with who I probably never would have been on a panel with if I didn't go to Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Several. I've done panels with pretty much the entire Farscape cast at one point, mm-hmm, or another. Peter Beagle. Actually, there's one panel that's what made me think of it. It was on the YO track. Me, Peter Beagle, Kathleen David, and a couple of other people, none of whom got a word evangelized because the panel had me and Peter Beagle and Kathleen David on it. And, you run that risk. I mean, you mentioned Peter and Harlan doing a panel. I remember one time they put an icon, it was an icon, not DragonCon, but they put me, Scott Edelman, Peter David, and Harlan Ellison on a panel together. And it's like, why did they bother with the three of us when Harlan's here? And it turns out, and he talked for the whole hour. I mean, the thing is, Scott, Peter, and I usually are the big talkers on whatever panel we're on, so I guess they wanted to just shut us up for an hour. But
that's pretty good.
So many writers that I never would have met otherwise, I got to, Joe Lansdale, a bunch of other people who just don't, people who don't do the Northeast conventions that I do.
Right, right.
Getting that opportunity.
It wasn't at DragonCon, but last fall at Archon in St. Louis, it was me and Joe Haldeman, and it was just like with Box Lightner, or even more. I was just kind of like, "Mr. Haldeman." And I actually had my original copies from when I was a little kid, from like 77, 78, of those two little Star Trek novels he did. I mean, they were bent up as hell, just almost in pieces. And I'm like, "Could you sign these for me? I've had these since I was a little kid." So, and then I got to spend an hour just interviewing him, basically, for the crowd. And that was one of the highlights of my life, really, as a writer, was getting to just talk about, writing with him and publishing and Star Trek and everything like that. That was amazing. Yeah. So, and afterward, his wife was just so sweet. She came up. She's like, "That was such a great event. I'm so glad. Robert's usually not – I mean, Joe is usually not excited about doing this kind of thing sometimes as much, but he really had a good time." So. I got two more really strange ones, and I'll be done with it.
Okay.
I'm pretty convinced that when I met Jerry Doyle in the early 2000s, I had on my Box Lightner, and I had my Army of Light uniform, and I met Jerry Doyle. This would be Garibaldi from Babylon 5. I came up to get his autograph, and I joked with him. He said something about my costume, and I said, "Yeah, it started out as a Sheridan costume, but as my hair falls out, it's becoming," and he's like, "Oh, a Garibaldi costume, ha ha, yeah." Well, he said something in his book a couple of years later about meeting a guy in a Garibaldi costume, and it's different, so it may not be me, but I'm kind of halfway, because he was, you know, he was drinking. I'm kind of halfway convinced.
Really?
Jerry Doyle,
Jerry,
yes.
Jerry Doyle.
So
wow.
I'm halfway
sorry, that was my sarcasm voice.
I'm halfway convinced that that was me that he talks about in the book, but I don't know for sure. It's not complimentary, so I don't know if I want to claim it. But all right, here's my favorite one of all. In 2004.
By the way, just about Jerry Doyle, this wasn't a Dragon Con either, but there was one convention, a Slanted Fedora convention in Indianapolis, where a very, very inebriated Jerry Doyle was lecturing me on the subject of drunk.
Of all things.
Yeah. Well, we were commuting to the convention because we were at the woman I was dating at the time was from her family's from Indiana. We visited them for Thanksgiving and then did the convention in Indianapolis. So we were, you know, saving on hotel bills. We were staying with her grandmother. And so we were driving back and I had a couple drinks, but I hadn't for like an hour or so. I was pretty well metabolized at that point. But Jerry went on at great length and extensive length on the subject of the dangers of drunk driving to me. And ordered another bourbon. But, yeah.
All right. My last one, as I mentioned that while I had I ended up spending about $500 on that Babylon 5 costume, and I had a pretty neat crusade costume of Galen. Yes. The costume that I wore one time that got the most people excited and people coming up to me getting their picture taken and everything, which never happened with the Babylon 5 costume really, was when I just got a red Adidas tracksuit and a white one of those little Under Armour hats and a bunch of gold chains and rings, and I grew my goatee out and I had sunglasses on and I was Ally G. And I practiced, for a couple of weeks. I watched the DVDs over and over, and I just practiced the voice, the accent, the rhythms, everything. And so I was really doing the Ally G experience, basically. So, right. But I've got my badge because, those giant honking Dragon Con badges that when you get the ribbon, too, it hangs down to your knee, basically, if it's at your belt or whatever. So I had that attached onto my tracksuit. It was very obvious. Very obvious.
Right.
Okay. So I'm going around, girls are getting their picture with me. I'm like, man, this is awesome. This is the best thing I ever did. And then I come off the street, off of Peachtree, into the Hyatt, into that atrium. And I take about, through the revolving door. And I take about three steps into the atrium. And this huge, and this huge African-American security guard comes up and grabs me by the arm. Like, he's a linebacker-sized dude, so there's no way I'm getting away from him. Grabs me by the arm and says, "No!" and swings me around and starts dragging me toward the sliding door exit thing. Well, it was so bizarre, so unexpected, that I stayed in character. And so, as everybody is looking at this black man dragging me out of the hotel, I start going, "Is it because I'm black?" So he chucks me out into the street, onto the sidewalk, and I'm standing there going, and people are all just staring, and I'm going, whoa, whoa, and I don't know what to do. I don't know why he did it. I don't understand anything. And so I stand there for a minute. I gather myself. I go back in, and he's standing there in the middle, and I start to walk by him again, and he kind of looks at me and goes, "Sorry, man." And I'm like, what the hell? I can only assume that he didn't see my badge the first time and thought I was like some undesirable or something, trying to crash the party. I've been trying to figure this out for 10 years.
Or maybe, he was menaced by Sacha Baron Cohen as a kid. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's pretty much my most bizarre little Dragon Con incident. And I'm,
I don't think we can.
Yeah, that was bizarre. So, all right. Well, the last little topic is just favorite other people that you've gotten to see or meet there. I mean, we've kind of covered this a little bit, but if there's anybody else that you've ever, you ever liked to see every year or that you kind of, like to hang out with or whatever, what do you think?
Some of the actors, but I see them at other shows too that I do more often. And I didn't go to Dragon Con between 2010 and 2011, which kind of messed with the whole go every year thing, and PPDC. there's a bunch of people that not so much necessarily incredibly famous people, but fans who go to that I get to see every year. Several of the people who run the tracks.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always good to see them. People. The Trek Tracks has changed hands over the years, mm-hmm. So it's. And there's some carryover. They're a good bunch of people, guys like Joe Crow, and Joe's a good example actually. Joe, I only ever have seen at DragonCon. That's the only time we've ever been in the same place at the same time. For that matter, I only really see you there. That's when I get Sue Phillips,
right?
Science fiction literature track, who's actually been a dear friend of mine for 20 years. But the only time I ever really see her is when I go to DragonCon. I think it's not so much the other guests, although that's always nice. But a lot of them are, people I see elsewhere as well. But the staff, mm-hmm. the people who run the tracks and the people who take care of things, the people who run the VIP lounge, who do a great job.
Sure. Yeah. I want to say that's you're absolutely right. It's been interesting too to both get to know the people who run the tracks or the people who used to run the tracks. Some of them have stepped down over the years, like I'm going to blank out now, but for example, Ron Nastrom, who's a great guy and ran the American Sci-Fi Classics for a long time,
right?
And used to run the comics track. Ray Rappaport was such a right. Sweetheart of a guy, and I always like to see him and talk to him. But the new people too, and of course Sue Phillips at Sci-Fi Lit. But it's also been interesting to some friends who were friends before, but have kind of come up in the world, like Joe Crow and Gary Mitchell took over for Ron the Sci-Fi Lit, and
right.
And seeing people like Larry Davis and Fregano Legister kind of get to be up and be panelists, now, and get to actually contribute and kind of give back some, and that's just been kind of neat to watch, people get more involved and be more recognized for their knowledge of, their knowledge and their willingness to help everybody have a good time and a good experience. So it's always good to see. I've got a very small reader base, but I do have a fairly loyal small reader base, and Dragon Con is where I see the most of them. So it's always nice to get feedback on the books and get to see those people too and talk to them and just hang out and eat dinner with them and all that kind of stuff. So.
Well, one person I also now like to see this has been a running gag with the two of us, and her, Elizabeth Dahl.
Yes.
Elizabeth and I have known each other virtually for years through various, online things on LiveJournal and Facebook and whatnot. And, we communicated over email and stuff, and we did a bunch of other things. But we had never met, including in 2009, we had readings across the hall from each other and managed to miss each other. We used at the same time, right across, and we still missed. We finally actually encountered each other in person last year, and basically the reason it happened was because she shared a room with us. It was Jay Smith, who runs HG World, me and my girlfriend Ren, and Elizabeth. We're all in a room together. We're going to be doing that again this year. And that was the first time I met her. Basically, I had to, actually agree to share a room with her in order to finally. It was really hilarious, just that we kept missing each other every freaking year.
The funny thing about that is that I live near St. Louis, in just south of Belleville, and she writes for the Belleville newspaper. Right. So I can't go outside my house without tripping over Elizabeth Donald around here.
Of course, yeah.
You've got to ask her when you're with her. Ask her if she's left her child at any rest stops lately, because the story she was telling in Memphis a few weeks ago was that they were exhausted after the Memphis Con, and the weather was so bad and everything, and they were driving back to Illinois, and they stopped at a rest stop and did this, that, and the other, and they got back in the car, and they had a whole bunch of their books and supplies and stuff in the back seat with their little boy, and they got about like 10 miles down the road and turned around to say something, and he wasn't there.
Ah!
And there was no turnaround. It's on the interstate. So they had to, like, blast through the median twice, of course, to come back, right? To go back and get him. Teddy was just standing there going, where have you been? So, yeah, that's, you know, I thought that was pretty good. But, yeah, that there's so many people. I mean, I hate to leave out, you know, so many, but I'm sure I'm forgetting tons. But, yeah, it's just like a family reunion. It's like the geek family reunion once a year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're to the end. Anything, any last Dragon Con thoughts you want to add before we see kind of what your latest is that you're up to and how people can find you?
Just that I'll be there again this year. I've already been confirmed as a guest. My bio's up on the website. I obviously don't have a schedule yet, but I doubt that'll happen until, you know, late July, early August or so. But I'm hoping to do another reading, another autographing, doing stuff on Joe's track and on the podcasting track, and the writer's track and whatever, and Sue's SF. So they're splitting SF and fantasy?
Yeah, what they did was they had a science fiction literature track, and then they had like a Wheel of Time track and a Pern track. And what they did,
they've always had that.
Well, they've split sci-fi lit into sci-fi lit and fantasy lit, and they've rolled all the individual fantasies into fantasy lit.
So it's
subtraction by addition, I guess you could say.
Yeah, especially since, you know, there's you know, the Wheel of Time is wound down, and obviously there aren't going to be any more Pern novels. So I can see the
yeah, I think it makes sense. I forgot who's going to run the fantasy track, but Sue will be still doing sci-fi lit, I'm pretty sure. So. And I'm pretty sure I'll be doing Starship Smackdown again. Yeah, I've been confirmed too. It was amazing.
This year
was crazy. They got back to me like, you know, the guest application thing went up in like November, and by the end of November they're like, yeah, you're in. I'm like, whoa, okay, wow. That was usually it's like April or May or June or something. So that was.
Oh, one thing I'm going to be doing this year that I've never done before, although I may do it at another convention before then. As was mentioned earlier, I'm a second degree black belt in karate. And one of the things I'm going to be doing is a self-defense workshop.
Oh, cool.
Basically, you know, just some basic stuff that you know, you don't need to actually be any kind of karate expert to be able to do. Just basic stuff that people can use to defend themselves if need be against somebody, you know, attacking them. But that's something I've been thinking about doing for a while. Just I think that's something that people would enjoy. Me and two other martial artists did a martial arts demo at DuckCon last year, and the other two guys studied two different disciplines from what I study. So that was part of what was cool about it. And that was more focused on people who actually already know martial arts, and I thought it would be cool to broaden it out and just do something that anybody can. So I'm going to be doing that. I'm going to be doing at Dragon Con this year.
That's very cool. Okay, yeah, it's neat to do something kind of like people can learn something and be interactive and all. That's cool.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Well, what have you got going on right now, publishing wise, that you might want to let people know about?
Well, I've got a new short story collection that's just out now in May of this year, called Tales from Dragon Precinct. It's the latest book in the Precinct series, which are fantasy police procedurals. Think Law and Order meets Lord of the Rings. or Dungeons and Dragnet.
That's awesome.
It's all in a fantasy, high fantasy setting with elves and dwarves and humans and wizards and stuff. But the plots are all murder mysteries, and the main characters are detectives.
That's awesome.
So, there have been three novels out so far, Dragon Precinct, Unicorn Precinct, and Goblin Precinct. And Tales from Dragon Precinct is a collection of short stories, about half of which have been published before in anthologies, and the other half of which are new, that are being published in this book for the first time.
Very good.
And that's out from Dark Quest Books. Mm-hmm. I've got, in theory, I wrote a Kung Fu Panda comic book that may come out someday.
Awesome.
I wrote it. It's been drawn. I've been paid for it. It was supposed to be out last summer. It still hasn't shown up yet. I don't know what's going on. But hopefully someday it will.
Well, the important part is you got paid, so that's...
Yeah. I've got stories out in a couple of recent anthologies, including Defending the Future. The latest one was called Best Laid Plans. That's also from Best Laid Plans. I've got a short story in Tales from the House Band, volumes 1 and 2, both from Plus One Press. And I've got a short story coming out in the next Badass Fairies anthology, which is called It's Elemental. And then in August, I've got another short story collection coming out called Ragnarok and Roll, which is Tales of Cassie Zukov, Weirdness Magnet. It's urban fantasy stories set in Key West, Florida. They're about rock and roll music, about scuba diving, about folklore, and about Norse gods. In fact, several Norse gods are supporting characters in this
book. Do the Norse gods actually go scuba diving?
Odin does.
Awesome. There you go. I'm in. All right.
That'll be out in time for Dragon Con. It's coming out in August. The week before Dragon Con, I'm actually going to be in Key West, and I'm trying to set up an appearance there, either at a local bookstore or at the local library.
Yeah,
it's still in the planning stages, and I'll have copies of that at Dragon Con. That'll be my
awesome. Movie. All right, well, everybody will be looking for that, I'm sure. Very good.
And I'm on the blogosphere pretty regularly. On tour.com, I'm doing now a Star Trek Deep Space Nine rewatch, which just started. I just finished up a Next Generation rewatch, so going through every episode of the show and commenting on it and such. And I'm also I've become a sports writer.
Yeah.
Much to my surprise, I now write once a week for the Pinstripe Bible, which is New York Yankees blog.
Awesome.
And it's on SB Nation, which is a rapidly growing sports.
Yes, indeed.
Blog. And they've got. Basically, they've got one blog for each of the 30 major league teams, and Pinstripe Bible is the one.
Right.
And I write for them once a week, just basically babbling.
That's just hilarious to me that you and I both write like sci-fi and fantasy whatnot, and then you got a sports thing for the Yankees, and I do a column and a podcast for college football. So
it's weird. There's some crossover there, you know. I mean, we're both sports fans and genre fans like to dress up funny and obsess over the trivia of their favorite thing.
Ain't that the truth?
And go to large gatherings with fellow like-minded
That's
people.
Right. And yell at the people that don't understand our point of view about it.
Yes, exactly. I'll never forget one time there was a Star Trek convention at a hotel in the Meadowlands, and it was in January, so the NFL playoffs were happening, and it was one of those rare years when the Jets were in the playoffs. And so the ground floor was taken up by a local radio station that was doing coverage of the game on Saturday, and the visiting team were all staying at our hotel. And then the mezzanine level was the Star Trek convention.
Oh, no.
And it was, you know, sort of battle of the obsessed, and I was starting to figure out who was the rookie.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Because it's not always the Star Trek fans that are the...
It really isn't.
Especially those Jets fans. They have a reputation within, you know, in pro football fandom. It's special.
Yeah.
So, all right. Where can people find you otherwise, like on the web or whatnot, if they want to follow what you're talking about or, you know, like blogging and whatnot?
Best bet is to go to my website at decandido.net. That's decandido.net. That's basically a portal to all the different things I do online. You can order my books from there. That's a link to my blog, to my Facebook page, to my Twitter feed, to the other podcasts I do, including the Chronic Rifts, which is a pop culture podcast I'm part of, Dead Kitchen Radio, which is my own monthly podcast where I talk about myself. HG World, which is the audio drama I do voices for. It's also got links to tour.com and to the Pinstripe Bible. Basically, the decandido.net is where you should go if you want to find
Very
me.
Very good.
And if you want to friend me on Facebook, just make the request. I friend everybody. follow me on Twitter. Although, if you do follow me on Twitter, be warned that if there's a Yankee game on, I'm going to be talking
about it. Yes, I always enjoy seeing your random Yankee comments. I go, oh, the Yankees must be playing. sure on...
And even more so now, you know, because now it's like, all right, I'm getting paid for this now. I really am.
Well, I'm sure on Saturday, it's always funny to me because I'm sure on Saturday afternoons or evenings, people are like, oh, that pulp writer guy is watching a football game. Because suddenly I'm bashing Alabama, you know, and going on about some obscure receiver or something. So, all right. Well, it's been a blast to have you on, Keith. I really appreciate it. And I think time for us to wrap up. We'll maybe get you on again down the road sometime to see on some other topic. But I thought you would be really good for this one, and I was, of course, correct. All right, folks. Well, that's going to do it for another episode of the White Rocket Podcast. Our time is up, and as always, we thank you for yours, and we will see you guys down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.